Whoop.
Okay. Okay, guys. Got the Blinded by the Light song in my head. I'm going to push it to the back. Push it to the back. Okay. Yeah, I'm so excited. Just to let y'all know, I'm so excited to be here for Ocel, and I really hope I justify her work. So sometimes I go to readings, and the introduction is as lovely and besequined as the writing itself. It's almost as if one speaker were a flute and the other a guitar. Two different instruments, yes. One a little quieter, a little subtler than the other. But in the end, they end up playing the same tune. That will not be happening tonight. Ocel's work presents such a deft level of lyricism, such a razor-sharp eye for precision, that whether she's writing poetry or flash fiction, no finesse of prose could ever compare. As a reader of Ocel's work, you are no longer a body, but a tongue. Meeting even the most overlooked minutiae on the most intimate of terms, the world becomes something you can taste, something you can wrap around and swallow and hold against your throat. Ocel's poetry has been featured in such highly acclaimed journals as Rattle, Mid-American Review, Salamander, Bird Feast, Puerto del Sol, and Meridian Magazine, among many, many others. She also has had her flash fiction published in The Collagist, Smoke Long Quarterly, and Best Small Fictions, 2016. Among her many accomplishments, Ocel's poem, The Navy Wife Talks in Her Sleep, was a runner-up for the Meridian Spring 2017 Prize for Poetry. Her poem, Lessons in the Provenance of Learning, was a runner-up for the New South Journal 2016 Poetry Contest. Her poem, The World's Trespass on the Body's Central Disruption, was a finalist for the Mississippi Review Poetry Prize 2016. And she recently received a fellowship to the Vermont Studio Center this past spring. Whether Ocel is allowing us to get up close and personal with her Navy wife, or a little boy being tuned like a radio, she is teaching us to lick the world profusely. But no, that's not it. Licking does not go deep enough. In fact, her work seems to parallel some of the lines from her most recent poem, Wishbone. We dig out the fused collarbone and let it dry on a windowsill. It's never sunlight. It's never felt sunlight. I'm sorry for ruining her lines. Let me go back. Okay. We dig out the fused collarbone and let it dry on a windowsill. It's never felt sunlight through the breast. And that is exactly what Ocel's work does. It pulls back the muscle and exposes the bone to sunlight. Thank you very much.
Transition, like from out there, I'm always like, that looks so awkward, and it feels awkward. But Alexa, thank you so much for introducing me. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I want my beer, but there used to be like a flat surface here, and now there's no flat surface, and I don't want to keep picking it up off the floor. So just imagine me drinking my beer while I'm reading you poems. Instead. Okay, that's not cooperating. So someone needs to take my photo because my mom asked me for a picture. And I would like to thank my students who I just met last week? Several of them are here tonight. A couple of former students are here, and I'm so pleased that you guys came out. I would also like to thank Barbara and David at the back there holding court. I have David's blessing this evening, which I'm just going to channel his enthusiasm for the written word and for verse and try to do justice to Barbara's overseeing of my manuscript, Waveland. All of these poems will be available in that manuscript as soon as someone picks it up for publication. So these poems I'm going to read, and I think I'm going to end with one while I battle with this microphone. Hey, Marianne. So while I battle with this microphone, I'm going to read poems that come from the voice of someone called the Navy Wife, breakup poems, and some poems about crows, which I am obsessed with, apparently. I think I just need to stand like this. So first, the Navy Wife. I'm going to introduce you to her. Just don't pay attention to what's going on down there. Okay. The Navy Wife talks in her sleep. I should just like take this off the stand and like walk around like a rock star. Matt to the rescue. I love you right now. Matt should just stay up here. What do you guys think? It's performance art, people. Cross genre right now for my 2135 students. No, but that's all right. I don't. That came this close to whacking me in the forehead. That's perfect. Well, that's perfect. Yeah, thank you, Matt. former illustrious host of said reading series. And yeah, okay, so I'm just gonna start. The Navy Wife talks in her sleep. You are a deer, my dear, and not quite here. So I am alone and braid this green season into our empty house, which in me is like a singed piece of silver thread being stitched through my center, as all new homes are, and unfamiliar. Marriage is not salvation. It is waking with horses in a field, an apple resting in the dirt, a deer with its belly slashed open, iron leaves of blood. My husband does not draw the knots out of my tongue. Somewhere the redbud trees are blooming the way bodies bloom beneath the earth, full of what they've left undone. And oh, tell me I'm not the only one who avoids having her center plundered and known. I set out a bowl of red plums and study their skins from the other side of the room until my skin too is drenched. I am red as a bowl full of cardinals clustered together before they break away. I've watched a female flit in and out of the chain link fence and how the male follows her to gulp down her dusk. Isn't he bright, the way he takes her everything? These are the mornings of black snakes looking for warmth on rocks and the blood smell thick and heady, drawing mosquitoes, the moan of the trees protesting the wind and the harmless distance of the stars' light we cannot see by day. This is not to say one of us is the deer and the other is the night or earth or the green of a summer evening. It is to say we are the dark with antlers by the roadside, the spring grass grown high, the cricket chirp and gravel dirt crunch scuffed beneath boots, the headlight beams into a slice of country and a fence. Yes, the way fences pretend to hold back fields, which can never be held. So I'm going to let you guys tell me this next poem, because I've gotten a yay and a nay from some people. Do you want to hear a hurricane poem or not a hurricane poem? I know, like, everyone's really... All right. I'll take that as a yes. So this poem is actually sort of the title poem of my manuscript. The manuscript title is a portion of the poem, so Waveland. And this poem is called Waveland, Mississippi, an elegy. I lived in Waveland, Mississippi with my ex-husband, who was a naval officer. We built a house. We moved into it. We lived in it for about 18 months, because if you know anything about being in any branch of the military, you move around a lot. So we sold the house. We actually sold it to my former in-laws. And then Katrina hit. And if anyone knows the coast of Mississippi or remembers the reports from post-Katrina, There are little towns all tucked into the Gulf there. They're called Passe Christiane. It's near Biloxi, Gulfport. Waveland was one of those little towns that got tossed around during the hurricane. So this is Waveland, Mississippi, an elegy. Oh, and Barbara, I have not gotten to the edit line edits that we met over. So if you hear stuff, it's, yeah. She's awesome, you guys. Okay, so Waveland, Mississippi, an elegy. Treaded and unlaced by the cattails, the dun-colored sneaker lies forgotten, and all things weighing the same in my mind, it swims away like our home in Mississippi, which once unfettered from slab and sky became part of the storm surge, because wind-blown water is not the same as hurricane, we'd learn when our all-state claim was denied. Before, we used to hang with Maisie, the neighbor's gardener, and because I was shy and young, I'd take the mondo grass she'd give me to plant in the too-deep gully in our front yard. They're thirsty, she'd say, the bucket of her voice dropping its water on me. But I never planted anything she gave. Mississippi's always had something live in its mouth. But after Katrina, I waved to Maisie only once by the wreckage of the carriage house. Then went on wondering about the stray cat I'd fed as our neighbor's car sat slant across our yard. To think they'd been angry when our house was built, the metal roof, the pergola too close to the street. Now our bathtub was in the drive. I reached beneath a fallen wall and found a loose doorknob. 10 years later, it lies in a basket of magazines, the old number one from our mailbox on the toilet tank. My roommates don't ask what for. I don't think about my ex-husband or miss his Navy uniforms or pickup truck, but from time to time, I revisit the image of that mahogany front door stained the color of mud. 6 panes of glass. I didn't care what the neighbors could see when they drove by. Couldn't be bothered. Not when the peepers grew so loud at night and the pines cracked like knuckles in the wind. Worry making me call the dog to come in from the yard. I'd turn off all the lights in the house and stand watching, waiting for the rain. The windows open an inch, knowing I was alone, my bare feet on the cold, hard floor. So that's something you're supposed to do in storms with like a heavy pressure system is open the windows an inch, because when it's really bad, I don't know if this is just like Mississippi lore or something, your windows can shatter. So I never saw that happen, but that house is no longer standing, and half the street of houses, the block where I lived, all of it slabbed. I remember the train tracks. We drove back about a week later because my ex-husband was part of a reconnaissance team to go and try to help folks. And the railroad track that ran along the coast, it looked as if the water had picked it up and twisted it into a roller coaster shape. And I just couldn't fathom the power of water to do that. This next poem is about my ex-husband, I guess, but it's in the voice of the Navy wife, so it's the Navy husband digs a pool. It just gives you a little touch of like what his character was like. For days, he drove a bright yellow bobcat to move earth from the center of our yard. Piled dirt along the back fence, exhausted, and measured our plot beneath the hot sun, resting all that had lain undisturbed. Patchy grass where oleander had stood, a place to put the dog. A yard smaller than a postage stamp on a zoning map folded into a drawer. Day or night, what I couldn't abide, he'd drag around for all to see until what had been a depression one day had corners and walls of dirt after a crew of men shaped the pit he'd dug. They secured steel rods into the earth. A concrete truck cracked our driveway in two. The slurry would set in 3 days, he said, and as it cures, will emit a chemical heat. At night, I'd step outside to water it with a hose. Though it had no drain nor lights, for years he'd fill and swim until one evening I stripped and waded in. The air was warm. The house had sold. He lived in another town. I took my turn swimming laps, then floating on my back in the center of what he'd exhumed. So that took place in Texas, which is where we went after Mississippi. And the next two poems, also occur in Texas. This next one is more of a reminiscence, though. So it's called The Navy Wife's Notes on Texas Wind. I watch what must be a beech tree outside the window of my Airbnb. A shattering of green and just one thin pane. I've used so many borrowed utensils today, fork, spoon, a dull ceramic knife to cut avocado and onion and overcooked sweet potato in a convection oven. I'm only miles away from where I once climbed up on the roof of our old house. Storm system visible across the miles. Flat roads that looked as if they could end at ocean. But there was only more desert, more dust. The tar shingles knocking above us as I laid that ladder to the rain gutter and climbed up with a hammer in my hand as if I could knock on the ceiling of sky against God's eye and find myself without him, without a husband, alone at last, wrapped in blue. I carried three nails between my lips, tense and with purpose. Always a nail begging to be put still into a coffin of wood, to make its slow spark of metal rent together the pieces of lives, as marriage does, the very word a screw and a drill. Do you think it's strange that it was I who rose above our home that night, crawled across to loosening shingles, and one by one took the wet nails from my mouth? I must admit it was a rush. All that wind, and I believed I could see straight to Lubbock, Texas. Or was it Amarillo, yellow star or rose of the panhandle? Strange how when I turned my face up, I forgot about the distance. So captivated by open sky, like an afterthought, like every wife spent evenings on rooftops, hammered by wind. So captivated by open sky, like an afterthought, like every wife spent evenings on rooftops. Sorry, I lost my place there. Hammered by winds, nailing her life down, thinking to let it fly away into some new pasture, so raw and green, it's almost blue. This is where I want my beer, but it's all right. Okay, so this is actually further west and still in Texas, but I wrote this after visiting Lubbock, Texas. So it is called The Land Where Your House is Built. And thank you guys for being an awesome audience so far. Keep up the good work. No, just kidding. The good listening. Watch me drink water. So the land where your house is built. Remember, it was once gold, desperate as a coin placed in a reservation slot machine. When your father drives through town in his Corolla, he feels small again, like he could park all day, listen to the dusty wind cut the feedlots, and be forgotten. Already we've ridden to the drive-through at Rose's three times to sate our craving for beef tacos. I say there must be drugs in their tortillas. Here, everyone's got something bigger than you. Hair, trucks, stomachs. It's an hour to the New Mexico border where the red sand makes ancient patterns if seen from above. At night, I make you walk with me around the subdivision. We step on fallen acorns from the trees. Someone's mother is making Chex Mix in her kitchen. They watch Fox News. While I think coyotes are drinking water from cattle troughs, their noses wet with blood, their ears are still twitching. This place is sun-drenched, no more than desert. Water knows to retreat to unexplored depths. The cotton farmers give their children less and less. What was once plentiful now hides behind fences where I know there are guns and people who believe in them. Yesterday, near the Coke machine, I saw a little girl. Long, dark hair in a braid as thick as my wrist. "Mama, mama," she said to the woman sweeping the floor beneath the tables. So that's Lubbock. So some breakup poems, you guys ready? A little bit of heartbreak. Not about the ex-husband. He doesn't even deserve those poems. So this one, I kind of think this is funny, but I'm not sure. And I want you to know all of it is true except for the imagined part at the end. I really don't know what he did at that point, but it's called The Gospel According to the Second Person, and I am the second person in this poem, so I'm the you. In poetry, we talk a lot about, like, there's always the, like, enigmatic you. Hey, Ken. the you. Like, the you always gets a lot of airtime in love poems and other poems. But in this case, I'm the you, so I'm sort of addressing myself. It's called Gospel According to the Second Person, and it goes like this. I feel like I should have a guitar right now. I'm going to play a song. You don't want to be anywhere he's been. After the relationship ends and it's such a small town, you think, did he stand at this cafe counter and order the cold brew earlier today? Because you know how he takes it, and you can't stop thinking about how he took it from you. So that later, when you're walking through woods down trails, you showed him, picking up bits of trash and stuffing them into Dairy Queen's styrofoam cup someone's abandoned, because you want to leave things better than you found them, it's a little ironic that you also want to burn it all down to scrub his memory from the planet. You know that that's not logical, so you decide to work harder, to really knuckle down, get stronger. To get him off your mind, you fly to Costa Rica, enter a commune for a week, then find yourself sitting one night on a beach in Colon, Panama, with an Ecuadorian shaman who holds out his brew of roots, leaves, and shoots, while the moon tosses her preserver of light over the ocean, speaking in a language you now understand is 100% emotion. Tiny bird, precious girl, the brew breathes, and for a while you believe. And then, in all this knuckling under, you can't help but remember his knuckles, the backs of his hands, that reminded you so much of your mother's, her gold rings sliding her fingers, coming to rest against the first knot of bone, like they were looking for a permanent home. "Take me everywhere with you," you'd asked him. And so he took you to the edge, watched you leap, then turned, went home, made himself a sandwich, and wrote a song about a girl he used to love a long time ago whom he lost. "My poor soul," he sings, "my poor soul. I wouldn't trade you for anything." So fuck that dude, right? How am I doing on time? I promised I was going to ask that so we don't go too long. 8:45, am I right? What? That guy wants this over. All right. Well, let's see. I just have like 18 more poems to read. Just kidding. Okay, so this is an elegy for a bunch of past exes. It's called Elegy for Two Former Lovers and One Ex-Husband. And it has an epigraph here. And that is, "And ghosts must do again what gives them pain," which is an odd end quote. And I'm sure that some of you know that feeling of you just keep making the same relationship mistakes. So that's kind of what this is about. One, he grows out his fingernails so he can play sad songs on his guitar. We park in my driveway kissing. Then I say, "Really, I have to go." His body is full of trapdoors and passageways, and I'm not sure I want to know where any of them lead. 2. He tries to tell me he loves me, but stammers it into my collarbone. When I ask him to repeat what he said, he replies, "Nothing, never mind." 3. I call it off during date number 5 over dosas and muta paner, his mango lassi and my Sprite. He balls the paper straw wrapper, passes it between fingertips. Maybe I'm more into his collections of masks and art deco furniture than him. I have a habit of being collected. 4. We could hold everything in abeyance, lie on the bed staring up between the slats of the plastic blinds. The parking lot lamps shine pickets of light across our torsos. We hear a disembodied voice announcing the score from a nearby stadium. "Touchdown," it says. 5. Desire asks me to make a shape out of something shapeless. How many times will I get it wrong? Half a bedroom set, 2 bookshelves, desk, futon, big screen TV, and his grandmother's lazy boy chair, the wreckage of his marriage. "Adorable," I say. 6. I go to work and feel I'm in a dream. Return to him and feel I'm in the world. The universe, we're making it. We touch the edge of space like we're silkworms, spinning light between our bodies, both of us repeating, "I want, I want," and the other saying, "Yes, me too, I want to." 7. When I point to a bottle of hydrocodone that my ex-husband has left behind, he swallows some when he thinks I'm not watching. We grill steaks and eat Oreo cookies. Later, he pukes in the master bathroom. I throw out the rest of the pills while he sleeps, then climb in, hold him. 8. For 10 years, I'm wife to a naval officer. I tell the story of my marriage like this. Our first year, he prefers to puzzle new brick into the patio. Each time I look out the window or step outside, he's there, in the yard, sentinel of hours. Most nights, I set his dinner in the fridge. 9. Here, I think, is a cove of honey. The kind of vine that's full of white sails angling backwards in the wind. They lift their nothing. For each lover I called out was razor thin, a quiet lashing me to him and him and him. I'm really glad none of those guys are in the audience tonight. And I have other poems here, but I think I'm going to skip forward and read you guys a piece of short flash fiction, and that will be it for tonight. So, and Bob Butler said he might come tonight. I don't see him here, but I said if he was here, and even though he's not, you can tell him I said it anyway, that this story is Bob Butler approved. So it is called Trippin' on Sunday. 32 Spring Street, that's our address. 5 of us in 3 bedrooms, 1 flight up above a shop that sells expensive menswear, leather belts and felt-banded hats, the kind of stuff that lasts forever, but people only buy when they're old and can afford it. I'm on my way to Sunday's apartment, got my short pleated skirt on and a pair of tall socks, striped black and white, my new tongue ring I push against the roof of my mouth, ball-bearing rainbow titanium 14 gauge. I can't wait to push my tongue out and show Sunday. Through the shop window, I glimpse a balding man, heavy set and slumped like a Christmas tree in February, his wife holding out a vest that's at least 2 sizes too small for his paunch. They're so close to caskets, it's not even funny. Well, it's a little bit funny. I think they're the reason why I think about Sunday the way I do. What women do to men is something else, but what men do to us, well, can be altogether wrong. Sunday's apartment is first floor, primo sunlight in this big bay window. Sometimes at night I catch a glimpse of her through the curtains. She's never alone at night, and all I see really are shapes, light. Sometimes I think I see the curve of her, but it's hard to tell, and I don't like to stop as I walk past. I just let myself study her windows as long as it takes me to walk by. The apartment number on her door is crooked. I drop my bag in the entry hall floor to adjust my skirt, then squat to rummage around in my bag looking for loose dollars. Fold a wad of bills into a bobby pin, uncap a tub of Vicious Vixen lip gloss and smear it on. Deep burgundy. Did my eyes with smoky coal this morning, leaning over the sink. Dab, dab, squint. Pinch your cheeks. That's what my mother always taught me. I stand and straighten the elastic of my underwear, soft snap, ding dong the bell and hear Sunday, slow as melting candy slinking to the door. Andy? I hear the deadbolt turn before I can answer. Come in. I stiffen my back, strut my chin out, push the door. It's all sunlight and Sunday. I can tell she'd been curled on the sofa, a magazine on the floor, a cold cup of coffee. Hey, babe, I say to her back as she walks towards what she's made into a bedroom. Used to be it was a dining room, her living room a parlor or something. She's got a short kimono robe cinched around her waist, seafoam blue with peacocks blazing the back. Did you see Angela last night, I ask? She's all curve, sunshine coming from somewhere. Where? Inside her? Behind the screen, she must have dropped her robe on the floor. I imagine her standing there, shining, nude, honey hair down her shoulders. Nah, her voice wafts over, hung out with Pepper and Mimi. I've got that tab for you if you want it. Oh, sure, I say casual, bite my lip, taste Vicious Vixen. I sit on the couch that's angled in front of the fireplace, put my pinned ones on the glass coffee table for the acid. Sunday has an actual fainting couch. That's where she sits. A painting of two bicycles on the wall opposite me, a series of nude drawings of Sunday taped to the wall. I turn and study them as I hear her slipping clothes on. All these old Newport, Rhode Island houses are chopped up into apartments, high ceilings, chestnut floors, carved mantels, tall windows. I think Sunday comes from money, but I know enough not to ask. She walks out in a tight white tank top and cut-off jean shorts, frayed edges high on the thigh. I imagine lifting the edge of the tank and running my fingers across her stomach. She sits, tucks her legs beneath her, and leans to the coffee table for the package of Dunhills, slides back the box's lid, offers me one. I reach, feel her finger brush against mine. Inside, I pull sapphire. From the Sig box wrapper, she slips a square of waxed paper, unfolds two tabs of acid. She picks her hair up off her shoulders, twists it into a knot, sticks a pencil in to hold it. I want to get fucked up. She looks at me, suddenly, seeming small on yellow couch, small in sunny apartment, small in her life. She picks up the waxed paper, puts one tab on her tongue, closes lips, and comes to stand in front of me. Here, she says, sticks the other tab on the tip of her tongue, bends. She smells like vanilla and cigarettes. My hands are in fists, breath stopped in my throat. I pause for one beat, then another. I think of that old couple in the store, the scent of cedar and mothballs, his paunch. The white paper square on Sunday's tongue, I open my mouth. Rainbow titanium, touch hers, lightning strike, bright and soft.
Thank you.